future lay out there in the bullpen.
The starters are out. Now it's time to head to the bullpen.
Squad, bullpen, now.
Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here are the producers of ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Go ahead, call the producers.
Crew it now!
Welcome into hour number two of the bullpen here on ESPN Radio 97.5 and 92.5. Brian McDonald, Cam Smith, John Delmer with you for another hour until 2 o'clock. We'll be back next week as well. And looking forward to the next segment when I force these guys to hear wrestling talk, because Brad Gilmore, one half of the Hall of Fame, will join us here at 1:15, then Mount Rushmore plus one at 1:30 before we get out. But carrying over the NFL conversation from the last segment, and if you want to join that conversation, please give us a call or a text on the HRMP listener line at 713-780-3776. We have to hear, Johnny, if you have this audio ready, this hot-ass take from former SportsCenter anchor, former Daily Show host, former Late Night Show host. He's got a super hot take on what he thinks of Vikings presumed starter J.J. McCarthy.
So this is the hot take. And this is interesting because I've thought about the top five quarterbacks, the guys I like. I don't know if I've thought about the top 10 or top 15, so I'm curious where this guy ranks. But my hot take is, ladies and gentlemen, J.J. McCarthy will be a better pro than John Elway.
You heard it, Cam Smith, for the first time. Johnny and I have already heard this audio. Craig Kilborn, again, former SportsCenter host back in the 90s, said J.J. McCarthy, a guy who's never taken a snap in the NFL, and I think Michigan had him attempt 5 passes per game on their way to a national title, will be better, have a better NFL career than a man who won multiple MVPs, 2 Super Bowls, and it went into the Hall of Fame, that being John Elway. Your reaction to that spicy, scorching hot take from Craig Kilborn.
Did he record this with Snoop Dogg? Because he must have
been saying he was high.
He must have been high out of his mind.
No, I can't remember. It wasn't Snoop Dogg, obviously, but he did have other people on this stream with him, and they reacted like you would expect, like just freak. Like, are you kidding me? Like, John Elway won 2 Super Bowls. He's a however many time MVP. I don't know how many times John Elway won it. I'd guess at least twice. He went into the Hall of Fame. I think he's probably universally regarded as a top 10 quarterback of all time. Maybe even top 5. I don't know. But that might be stretching it. I mean, I think he's probably going to be regarded behind, obviously, Brady, Montana. I would probably say Peyton Manning as well. Yeah. I think the conversation kind of starts after that. But definitely within inside the top 10. And J.J. McCarthy, who's never taken a snap in the NFL, he's trying to throw out here that this dude is going to have a better career than John Elway.
Look, I get, like, especially around the draft time, you're obviously going to, part of the drafting process is comparing the draftees to current and past players. Like, I get that's a normal thing. And even some of those are just like, what are you talking about? But to say he's going to have a better career than a Hall of Famer with, like you said, without throwing a pass in a single regular season game, I feel like sometimes people just, they even in their head, they're like, this is going to be an idiotic hot take, but I'm going to say it because if it hits, I'm going to look like a genius.
Well, and I think it's also like, I want what we're doing now. I want people saying Craig Kilborn said, because that then takes people to look at his, you know, podcast, his stream,
does
whatever.
He owe JJ money or something?
It'd be one thing. Like, I know, you know, obviously no rookie. If we're going by what we're talking about, how can you compare a guy who hasn't taken snaps in the NFL, then you can never compare a rookie to an all-time great. I would make an exception for the guys who are universally regarded as generational prospects, right? Like Andrew Luck comes out, like, oh my God, Andrew Luck. Yeah. He's going to be the next whatever. Now, obviously it hasn't panned out this way, but people thought the same thing of Trevor Lawrence.
Thank you.
Yeah, and that kind of makes the point, right?
Thank you.
Like, I would make an exception, even though it's still ridiculous and too soon, blah, 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 for guys of that ilk. J.J. McCarthy, I know he went 10th overall. I think it was 10th overall. Yeah. But I don't think he's ever been regarded as that. Like, if Michigan thought he was that guy, they would have let him attempt more passes than he did. Now, yeah. I mean, you could make the argument, well, they had a formula. They ran the ball. They played defense. They didn't need J.J. McCarthy to run or to throw it. And fair, because they won the national title. I can't argue against that. But still, like, I just don't see anything from what I've seen with J.J. McCarthy playing in the last 2 years at Michigan where I thought, oh, he's got a chance to – like, I would have even thought it was a stretch if you were going to say he was going to be a Pro Bowler. Like, I would even have thought that might have been a stretch. I mean, to then take the leap from that to Hall of Famer, multiple time MVP and Super Bowl winner is just beyond.
That's why this is still kind of mind-boggling to me that this is actual audio.
Yeah, Craig Kilborn with a take for the ages. So let's quickly get in some thoughts about the NBA Finals. Game 3 could be heard here on Sunday, tomorrow. Coverage starting at 6 o'clock here on ESPN Radio 97.5 and 92.5. But another comeback for the ages for Tyler Haliburton in the Indiana Pacers the other night in Game 1.
Jumper off the mark, won't go. Rebound, Nesmith. The Pacers with a chance to win it. Final seconds, no fouls to give. Haliburton looking. Haliburton driving, pulls off, jump shot. It's good! It's good! With 3/10 of a second remaining! Timeout, OKC! Tyrese Haliburton does it again!
Credit to the audio there for ABC of Tyrese Halliburton's game winner, who, I mean, I cannot believe this is the guy who didn't get a single vote in the new award for Clutch Player of the Year.
And this was also the guy that was voted the most overrated player in the NBA.
Now, it's funny because, like, obviously people are now reacting to, like, we got to move him up the list. So I was just, like, curious, like, let me find the top 100 players list. And this one comes courtesy of The Ringer. And it looks like it was last updated on June 2nd. But it has Tyrese Haliburton 7th in all of the NBA. So, I mean, that's he's obviously behind guys like SGA and Jokic and Anthony Edwards, the guys you would expect. He's behind Luka as well. But he's ahead of some pretty formidable players, Jalen Brunson, Tatum, Donovan Mitchell, Wimby, LeBron, although obviously he's 1,000 years old, AD, Jalen Brown, finals MVP just a year ago. What do you think of that ranking now of Tyrese Haliburton, 7th best player in the NBA? Is that fair? Or is he at 7 overrated?
That's a tricky one.
Because I think sometimes when you call someone overrated and then he overperforms, then you move him up too far. You kind of overreact the other way. Like 7th seems like I might knock him down a couple spots if I'm being honest.
Yeah, I think 7. I was kind of shocked when I heard 7, but I definitely would be okay with him being in the top 10. But that still doesn't make him, like, overrated. Like,
well, I mean overrated is relevant to wherever you're rated at. Like, it doesn't mean you're a bad player, but it just is a, you're ranked this, you really should be here. It's not really like you're bad, it's just
true. Well, but I'm also, because the overrated comments were coming out like a month and a half ago. Mm-hmm. So those comments might not accurately reflect where his ranking is now. But I mean, honestly, it would be hard to disagree with him being at 7, because not only has he had a phenomenal year, but look what he's done in the playoffs. And I don't think anybody and their mama thought the Pacers would be in the finals.
Well, yeah, or winning. Like, before the series, Joel, Jeremy, and I all picked our winner. I think Joel had him at 6, and then I had OK in 5. Joel had OKC in 6, and I think Jeremy either had OKC in 5 or 6. I don't remember. So, I mean, let's get into that, though. Like, Pacers win game 1. You now give them a chance? Like, what would you put their odds at? Like, 10 being they're locked to win the series, 1, they have no chance. Where would you put them at right now? Because I still think OKC wins the series. Now, I'm now willing to move that up to OKC in 6 or 7. I'm certainly off of the OKC in 5 at this point. I don't think OKC is winning the next 4 in a row. What odds would you give the Pacers currently?
I still don't think I can pick them to win, but I definitely think that it can be at least stretched to game 7.
Yeah, that's kind of what I'm leaning to now, like OKC in 7.
Yeah.
But, I mean, this is one of the most incredible runs. Like, they've had this game where in each round, obviously remember the second round or first round against the Bucks, I believe it was game 5 against the Bucks, then game 4 or game 3 against the Cavaliers, obviously game one against the Knicks and then game one against OKC, each time where their win odds are just astronomically small. I mean, in that game against OKC in game one, they were down, I think it was 15 with like like 4 minutes left. It was like seven inside of a minute. And they just find ways to pull off these improbable wins to the point where, like, if I'm starting a franchise, I mean, Tyrese Halliburton would be amongst my first 10 picks. Like, this ranking, Jokic 1, Shea 2, Giannis 3, Luka 4, Steph Curry 5, I might. Like, I mean, Steph's getting up there. I know he's still a better player than Tyrese, but, like, if I'm building a franchise, I think I'd rather have Tyrese because of the age. Anthony Edwards is 6, and then Tyrese Halliburton is 7. Followed by rounding out your top 10, Donovan Mitchell, Jalen Brunson, and Jason Tatum. I might drop down Halliburton a few spots, maybe to 10, and move those three guys. I mentioned Tatum, Brunson, and I forget who the other one was now. This list isn't loading. Our Wi-Fi is terrible.
Mitchell.
Donovan Mitchell, yeah. I might move those guys ahead of him just because, like, he's not – I know he's had some big games in the playoffs with these 30-point performances, but – Let's remember where he was. Like, he finished the night 6 of 13 after he hits the game-winning shot, right?
Yeah.
Let's just say, because it wasn't like this wide-open crazy look or a wide-open easy look for him. Let's say he misses a shot. Like, we're crediting him now because he went 6 of 13, he hits the game-winning shot. I think he finishes the game with, like, 15 points. He misses that. He's a guy that goes 5 for 13, not a shooting percentage you're happy with. And he scores, what, like 12 points in the game?
And then we're having the conversation about, like, well, see, this is what we're talking about.
One shot turned from, oh, man, Tyrese disappeared, to he's the GOAT clutch player.
Big shot.
Yeah. I mean,
Tyrese.
It's crazy, but it's true. I mean, if he finishes that game 5 of 13 for like 12 points, we're having a 180 conversation from what we're having right now.
We were having the conversation of, oh, they lost because Tyrese.
Yeah, in part. Like, there would be other things. I mean, obviously, you'd have to list turnovers because they had a crazy amount of turnovers in that game.
Yeah,
but
they did.
Certainly, Tyrese would be one of the dogs that you mentioned as far as what prevented them from winning game one. But it suddenly become a great series to follow. I wasn't sure how competitive it would be, but shout out to the Pacers, man. They are so fun to watch. All right, we got a break here because on the other side of the break, Brad Gilmore, one half of the Hall of Fame, which you can hear Tuesday and Wednesday nights, mostly at 7 o'clock. He, alongside Booker T, the two-time WWE Hall of Famer. Brad Gilmore will join us next when we turn here in the bullpen to talk about WWE Money in the Bank, which takes place tonight on Peacock at 7 o'clock. Be back in a couple minutes. Don't go anywhere.
ESPN 97.5.
Baby, I choose you. You ain't gotta be the only one we could be too. I see you over there with a body that can serve. Looks a blessing when you step it like you came from the good.
This is the Bullpen on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios. Here are the producers of ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Welcome back into the Bullpen, ESPN Radio 97.5, 92.5. This is Brian McDonald alongside Cam Smith and Johnny Bellmer. I don't know if we'll hear their voice much in this segment because they're not much fan of the wrestling. But the one man that is the man joining me right now. He is one half of the Hall of Fame. You heard a song there coming into the segment that you would hear in segment two each night when you can hear the Hall of Fame on these airwaves. Brad Gilmore along with two-time WWE Hall of Famer every Tuesday and Wednesday night on these very airwaves with the Hall of Fame. And today, starting at 4 o'clock, you can also hear the Hall of Fame on ESPN Radio National. Brad Gilmore and Booker T and their other co-hosts will be breaking down the full fight card and getting you ready for UFC 316 with... we had a whole bit queued up there. Damn. Because I didn't want to try to say the name, Brad, so Johnny was going to play the name for me, but apparently we're having some technical difficulties. Excited to hear you guys break down this card for UFC 316 with the show coming up at 4 o'clock. Thank you for joining me.
Hey, thanks, B-Mac. Yeah, man, UFC 316. I want to have like a little sound drop for that one, too. It says, give me a hell yeah.
Yeah.
It's 316, man, and like, you know, that only comes around once ever. For the UFC, and you have Sugar Sean out there with Davishwale.
There we go.
Like to say his name just like that. You have to say it with extra emphasis
because
it requires that because there's so many syllables in it.
There's so many ways to mess that up, yeah. There's so many ways to mess that up. And also, big card coming up for you guys with Reality Arresting. You got the NXT Tag Champs defending the belts a week from today, Saturday, June 14th at Walker, Texas Lawyer Arena in Texas City. So definitely a card worth going out to Texas City to watch. Before we get into Money in the Bank, talk about that match and the big card you guys have coming up with Power Shift a week from today.
Yeah, Reality Wrestling Platinum presents Power Shift, you know, big main event of Zilla Fah 2. You know, he's taking kind of the internet ablaze, and Ryan Davidson for the Reality Wrestling Championship. And as you mentioned, first time in history, especially to my knowledge, that the NXT Tag Team Championships are being defended anywhere but a WWE show. And that is going to be at Reality of Wrestling when the Command, Terrell Tempo, and Big Luther take on Hank and Tank. And man, I'm going to tell you what, like, I've been a wrestling fan since 1998. And the fact that I'm going to be sitting ringside and on the call for a WWE sanctioned championship match is actually really awesome. And I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, it's incredible. I mean, obviously you guys are going to have access with Booker T's name, you know, on the card, but being the first promotion to be a part of the WWE ID program has to have been huge for you guys as far as getting to work with some of those WWE talents coming through the Walker, Texas Lawyer Arena there in Texas City.
Oh, man. You know, when we got the call that they were doing the ID program, and yeah, they wanted to make us the first school with the official designation, it was kind of the culmination of a lot of hard work. Your Reality of Wrestling has been around, you know, officially since 2012, but the school goes back to 2005 under a different name and promotion. But we really worked so hard to have great production, a great facility, great training, and not just look at it from the inside the ring aspect of wrestling, but the outside the ring, the promos, the characters, the entrances. And for WWE to recognize that, and I have to give a huge shout out to Shawn Michaels, the Heartbreak Kid, who's been so supportive of Reality of Wrestling, as has Paul Triple H Levesque. They've been great to us, and it's just really crazy that Reality of Wrestling is kind of, it's the predominant, you know, wrestling company at our level.
Yeah, certainly so. I mean, you could definitely make that argument. I would not argue against that. Brad Gilmore joining me, one half of the Hall of Fame. You can hear Tuesdays and Wednesdays here on ESPN 97.5 and the voice of Reality of Wrestling. We'll get into his book on Back to the Future here in a little bit. But let's get into this card for Money in the Bank tonight, Brad. Let's start with the men's Money in the Bank match. I think this, and you could kind of make this case, I think, most years when you see the six or sometimes seven names involved in the match where, like, well, there's maybe two or three names that can actually win this. And for my money, that's probably Seth Rollins or LA Knight, kind of end of list. I think it's a little too soon for Penta. I don't see that Andrade's story's there. I mean, I love the El Grande Americano storyline, but I don't see him as being a Money in the Bank winner. The kind of the wild card to me is Solo, especially if they want to further this fracture between him and Jacob Fatu, the U.S. champion. But how do you see this match playing out?
I think that you kind of nailed it there at the very beginning. It comes down to really two names for me when I look at the field and what we have here. Seth Rollins, since the turn at WrestleMania and kind of the alignment of this new faction with Paul Heyman, it kind of would give that story even a little bit something extra. He's been a Money in the Bank winner before, obviously, probably with the greatest cash-in of all time at WrestleMania 31 all those years ago. So it could really give a little extra oomph to that. But the person I would put it on, and the one I kind of think, I hate to use this word, but needs it in a little bit of a way, is LA Knight. LA Knight has been a consistent crowd favorite for the last 2 to 3 years. He had the United States Championship match, which won the championship, and then he had the great match with Jacob Fatu at WrestleMania. And since that, you know, it just feels like he needs that next step to get to the next level and to really be in that main event world title picture. And there's no better way to really put somebody like that in the fans' eyes and really everyone's eyes than to be the Money in the Bank holder, because that guy could be the world champion at any given moment. So if it were me booking the show, I would go LA Knight. That's who I'd want to see go out there and do it. But if he or Seth Rollins wins, I won't be surprised at all. Solo Sikoa is an interesting one just because they gave him such a rocket strap push, you know, to the main event scene, you know, SummerSlam. He took over the bloodline when Roman went down. And I just feel like I just really feel like Jacob Fatu has kind of taken over that position. And I just kind of feel like it'd be forcing it to put it on Solo Sikoa, honestly.
Yeah, no, I do too. I hope it's the moment for LA Knight, because I kind of view Seth Rollins winning it the way you sometimes hear about guys who get the actual belt, where, like, they don't need it, right? Like, they're over to such a degree, even without the title, that it'd be better used giving it to someone who they could elevate with. And LA Knight, I think this was November 23, maybe it was November 22. He had that title match against Roman, I believe in Saudi Arabia, and you thought, okay, he's right there about to turn the corner to superstardom. And they just kind of, I mean, he did have the U.S. title run, but it feels like they've just kind of messed around and not really capitalized on the huge momentum that he had from his call-up.
I think that he was kind of a victim of bad timing overall, just because the main event scene was so heavy during these last 2 years, especially with the reign of Roman, the rise of Cody. You had the CM Punk and Drew storylines going on, and it just didn't seem like there was a place for him in either world, because they were so tied up, really heavy with all the main event stories. It was just kind of him buying his time. You know, unfortunately, or fortunately, however you want to view it, he's come on to this career renaissance late in his career. He's really caught on at what most people would normally consider toward your tail end of your run. So to me, if you want to get a world title run out of an LA Knight, you pull the trigger now. And look, if the stories are going kind of like they're trending, I know this is going to make you and the rest of the audience just kind of feel like nails on the chalkboard. Logan Paul is heading to the direction of being the next world heavyweight champion. It's going to happen. He's going to beat Jey Uso. He's going to be the next world heavyweight champion. And he being Logan Paul and LA Knight have a great history with each other, and actually had some really great matches going back to SummerSlam last year for that United States Championship. So it would kind of make sense to head in that direction if you eventually want the title on LA Knight.
You know, I like that booking. You know, I look, there will be obviously a vocal presence online that would cringe and push back on the idea of Logan Paul being the world champion. But look, to me, everything that should be booked around heat, and what guy on the roster gets more consistent heat than Logan Paul? So I'd be all for that. And like, if booking ahead, if you had a situation where, let's say Logan Paul is the challenger for Jey Uso at SummerSlam, he takes the title, and then eventually LA Knight a few months later, or maybe, you know, even into next year, cashes in on him as the Money in the Bank winner, I'd be totally for that. Let's move over to the women's side, because I do want to ask you questions about Stephanie Vaquer and Roxanne Perez because of their ties with Booker T. But this kind of looks like with Rhea Ripley, Stephanie Vaquer, Alexa Bliss, Roxanne Perez, Naomi, and Julia as your six women in the Money in the Bank match, it kind of feels like Rhea Ripley end of sentence. Do you see anyone else having, like, if you were going to go place a bet on this somewhere, like, is there anyone else worth betting on, or is it Rhea Ripley's briefcase to win?
You know, this one, more so than maybe any Money in the Bank ladder match in recent memory, is a pick 'em, in my opinion. Rhea Ripley, could she be the Money in the Bank holder? Yeah, but I would kind of look at her similar to Seth Rollins. Like, does she need to be the Money in the Bank holder? Rhea Ripley's kind of always in the conversation for the championship. So if you want to elevate somebody, you just called up in the last 4 weeks, you know, four or five of big talent from the NXT Women's Division, but three former NXT Women's Champions in Roxanne Perez, Julia, and Stephanie Vaquer. It seems as though the momentum is on the side of a Stephanie Vaquer and a Roxanne Perez. I think Julia's a sleeper pick. If you're asking me to place a bet, it's really hard for me, B-Mac, but just for the sake of maybe shocking the world, I'm going to go with Julia as it, because Stephanie Vaquer is already boom in that main event scene. Cameras and lights and action is all on her. Roxanne Perez has some stories going on with the Judgment Day and Rhea Ripley, which kind of leaves Julia as an odd woman out, even though her and Zelina Vega look like they might be heading towards a U.S. championship match. So, again, as I say, it's a pick 'em. I just threw Julie out there. When you said for me to come on earlier, I thought I was going to pick Stephanie Vaquer. That just shows you how big of a pick 'em this is.
Yeah, I do. I got to ask you, like, is with Stephanie Vaquer not in NXT, is Booker okay? Like, I know that was a big part of his week every week. That seeing Stephanie Vaquer hit the devil's kiss on people. How is he doing with not being able to call that action every week?
You know, I think he took it hard. I think he's still in the stage of acceptance.
Sure.
But you know, he's bequeathed the call to Pat McAfee, and we'll see if McAfee can, you know, do it justice. I know he's starting off trying to do that call of the Devil's Kiss well, but yeah, you know what though, Stephanie Vaquer, her coming through NXT was great, and I think it elevated her, but she was main roster ready from day one. This is where she always needed to be. When you talk about, there's one word that you can't teach. You cannot teach presence, and she has a presence about her. Every time she walks into any arena, you could know nothing about her, and you go, oh, she's about to do something.
Yeah.
I don't know what it is, but she's about to do something, and she's always had that, and I'm so excited to see what she actually does on the main roster.
Not to end on a bummer here, but I'd be remiss not to ask you about, I think, the biggest news coming out of WWE in the last couple of weeks, the release of R-Truth. I heard you guys talking about on the Hall of Fame a couple of days ago. I think the wrestling world was pretty shocked by this. Maybe this is just a sign of the times now that TKO is taking over WWE, and it's just, frankly, like a line item in the budget. They decided that that was the move they had to make. But your reaction to the release of R-Truth by WWE?
Yeah, I was obviously disappointed by it because he's been such a consistent force and presence on the show and always done well in everything that he's been given and always entertaining and a super crowd favorite. You know, I do think that when you talk about the TKO and looking at the budget and becoming a line item, I do think that's the era that we're in. And R-Truth's been there since 08. You know, really his run started back in 99, except for that brief stint in TNA. So when he came back through 08 through 25, you're looking at an 18-year career somewhere around there, right? So this is a guy who was probably making pretty good money. And he's in his early 50s, and I think he was probably a line item. And they're like, oh, where can we cut some of the talent budget? And maybe his contract was just too expensive to renew. I don't really know the reason why. To me, that's a guy who you work with and say, can we restructure your deal? Can we keep you around? You're a great ambassador. You're a great presence on the show. I do think he's going to end up back in WWE in some way. I don't know how soon that's going to be, but I was shocked by it. In a business where I'm not shocked really at all ever, that one was a shocker.
Yeah, certainly so. I wish we had more time because I got more questions for you. But we're talking to Brad Gilmore, co-host with along Booker T with the Hall of Fame. You can hear every Tuesday and Wednesday night here on ESPN 97.5. And you can hear Brad and Booker T today at 4 p.m. on ESPN 97.5 as they break down the UFC 316 card. You can also hear Brad as on the call for Reality Wrestling. Again, they have a big show coming up a week from today. Power Shift with the NXT tag team titles being defended. They're the Walker, Texas Arena, the Walker, Texas Lawyer Arena in Texas City. But Brad, before you go, you've got a book out on Back to the Future entitled Why We Love Back to the Future, 40 Years of Fandom, Flux Capacitors, and Timeless Adventures. Tell the listeners where they can get that copy and what that book's all about.
Man, the book is about kind of my love and the collective love of what I consider the greatest cinematic trilogy of all time, the Back to the Future trilogy. These are movies that I love beyond belief, and I've spent countless hours and days and feels like decades having conversations about them. So I decided to compile the making of the original trilogy, the animated series, the ride, the video game, the musical, theories that I have about the films, and there's also contributions from a lot of people from the world of Back to the Future because I've gotten to interview so many of them. Mikey Day from Saturday Night Live writes the foreword to the book. Harry Waters Jr., who played Marvin Barry in the film, writes an introduction. Really, if you love the movies or you want to know more about them, you can find it on Amazon or wherever books are sold.
All right, that is Brad Gilmore. Hear him today along with Booker T at 4 o'clock previewing UFC 316. And make sure you listen to the Hall of Fame every Tuesday and Wednesday, mostly at 7 o'clock right here on these very same airwaves. Thank you for joining us, Brad. Have a good show today.
Thanks, B-Mac. Money in the bank, baby.
I know, man. I can't wait. We'll talk to you again probably around SummerSlam whenever I convince these other two to let me talk wrestling. Have a great day, man.
Have a good one, man.
All right, that's the voice. I turned my own microphone off there. That was an interesting moment. Again, that was the voice of Brad Gilmore. Check him out today at 4 o'clock along with Booker T as they preview UFC card 316. All right, we went a little bit over there, so we've got to make up some time on the other side of the break. The bullpen will be back in just a couple of minutes.
ESPN 97.5.
My perfect day has sand, salt, water, and friends. But my moderate to severe plaque psoriasis can take me out of the moment. Now I'm all in with clearer skin thanks to Skyrizi. Risankizumab Riza, a prescription-only 150-milligram injection for adults who are candidates for systemic or phototherapy. With Skyrizi, most people saw 90% clearer skin, and many were even 100% plaque-free at 4 months. Skyrizi is just 4 doses a year after 2 starter doses.
Don't use if allergic to Skyrizi. Serious allergic reactions, increased infections, or lower ability to fight them may occur. Before treatment, get checked for infections and tuberculosis. Tell your doctor about any flu-like symptoms or vaccines.
Thanks to Skyrizi, there's nothing on my skin. And that means everything. Ask your doctor about Skyrizi, the number one dermatologist-prescribed biologic in psoriasis. Visit Skyrizi.com or call 1-866-SKYRIZI to learn more.
I'm Shanola Hampton. Every day, millions of people face hunger. Today, I will share with you some of their experiences. I'm stuck between paying for medications or paying for food. John from Maine. After paying my bills, I can buy groceries. It's sad to say, food comes last. Alice from Oregon. I thought pantries were for less fortunate people. But anybody could be less fortunate in a day or even a second. Claire from Virginia. The Feeding America network of food banks helps provide over 6 billion meals to people in need each year. No one should have to worry where their next meal will come from. Together, we can end hunger. Learn more at feedingamerica.org.
Imagine the legacy you could leave behind. Imagine a career where every day, every lesson, every word of encouragement, it all adds up to something greater. One teacher can inspire a lifetime of learning. At Teachers of Tomorrow, we believe in the power of one. One teacher, one student, one moment that changes everything. Teaching isn't just a job. It's a legacy of learning that shapes the next generation. If you've ever felt the call to teach, your time is now. Start your teaching journey today with Teachers of Tomorrow. We're here to guide you every step of the way. A bachelor's degree is all that's required. Best of all, it's free to apply, and you can be teaching in just 6 months. Call Teachers of Tomorrow at 800-813-9441, 800-813-9441. That's 800-813-9441, because the world needs teachers like you.
Throughout the course of human history, singular moments have shaped who we are, who we'll become, and even the world as we know it. Some men discovered new worlds.
It's one small step for man, one giant leap for mankind.
One man advocated for the need to hire a contractor.
Mr. Gorbachev, tear down this wall.
Others put pizza on a bagel.
When pizza's on a bagel, you can eat pizza anytime.
These courageous men gazed upon a monument and asked, what if we add one more? This is Mount Rushmore Plus One.
Welcome in, Houston, to the best part of your weekend. Welcome in to Mount Rushmore Plus One, the groundbreaking, award-winning segment that has forever changed the landscape of sports radio. And we'll land the three of us, along with Sean Mapes, in the Texas Radio Hall of Fame one day, and far less than the 27 years it took those bums in the morning.
Slackers.
I have upped my insults in this bit. I love you guys, John Lynch. Anyway, you're the reason I got into sports radio. All right. This is Mount Rushmore Plus One. Again, big thanks to Brad Gilmore for joining us in the last segment. Listen to he and Booker T at 4 o'clock today as they preview UFC 316. All right, I will go ahead and go first because it ties into the last conversation. This is Money in the Bank, to me, features one of the best gimmick matches the WWE has, the ladder match for the contract that guarantees you a title match. But they've had a lot of dud gimmick matches. Matches like, what in the hell were they thinking when they booked this? This is a list of those. The worst, most ridiculous gimmick matches that I've seen as a wrestling fan. Starting off, number one, and this is a split because it's kind of the same thing, and this is mostly a WCW thing, but they used to put things on a pole, or in one case, they put something on a forklift, and in order to win the match, you had to get that object, or in one case, a person down. They put Viagra on a pole at one point. They put a wrestler's mom lifted up on a forklift. And to win the match, you had to get said object or person down. There's a reason why WCW is no longer in business. They went out of business in 2001. But putting things on a pole or Judy Bagwell's mom on a forklift, not great.
I will say this. I did used to watch wrestling when I was younger, and I remember a match where it was a cage match, but there was an item on top of the cage.
Yeah, was it on a pole?
I don't
remember. Because that was the WCW staple. They put things on a pole all the time. The worst one was when they put Viagra on a pole.
It might have been a pole, but there's definitely a cage involved, and they had to climb up the cage and then climb something else, and I was just kind of like, where are we going with this?
They really lost their way at a certain point. Next one on my Mount Rushmore Plus One of most ridiculous gimmick matches, and I actually kind of enjoy these, but it's just because of the name, and you know they can't pull off the promise that gets me. The Buried Alive match, a staple for Undertaker's long-storied Hall of Fame career. But in the very first one, they buried Undertaker alive, quote-unquote, and then he stuck his hand through the grass behind the grave to show that he was still alive. And they went on to have, I don't remember exactly how many, but 5, 6, 7, maybe even more Buried Alive matches. Spoiler alert, no one died.
Clearly.
So it kind of loses the luster when you can't fulfill the promise of the match. I'll speed through the rest of these. Next one, this has only happened once. A Gulf of Mexico match between CM Punk and Chavo Guerrero, where to win the match, you, as the name would suggest, had to throw your opponent into the Gulf of Mexico. That was how you won the match.
Wow.
CM Punk hit the GTS, the go to sleep, and Chavo Guerrero fell into the water, making CM Punk the winner of the one and only Gulf of Mexico match.
I'm giving you some homework if you want to go get
stoned and watch something ridiculous. Watch the Gulf of Mexico match from CM Punk and Chavo Guerrero. Next one on my list, most ridiculous gimmick matches in wrestling history, the dog kennel match. This happened between Al Snow and Big Boss Man back in the day, where you had the typical steel cage match, which was right up, or the typical steel cage, which was right up on the ring. And then you also had the Hell in a Cell, which was wider. You had both of those in play at the same time, and the gimmick was in that space in between the typical steel cage and the Hell in a Cell, they were supposed to have, like, killer attack dogs, like, as a deterrent from keeping the wrestlers from trying to escape. Only problem is, because they were worried about the safety of the wrestlers, they had dogs that just sat around, like peed on the floor, started humping each other.
Oh, nice.
And it was nothing, like the scary aspect of killer dogs prowling around the outside was completely shattered right away.
Kennel from hell.
Yeah, Big Boss Man versus Al Snow back in the day. That was not a winner. And then last but not least, one of the most ridiculous things I've ever seen involved the late, great British Bulldog. He was once involved in a match where to win it, you had to smother or in other ways get your opponent covered in dog poo. Yes, WWE back in the day had a dog poo match with British Bulldog getting some dog poo.
Was it real dog poo?
I mean, I don't know if they gimmicked. I don't know if this is working poop or shoot poop is in wrestling parlance. I don't know which one
that's
this was.
That's crazy.
But they've had a fascination. Like Roman Reigns before this current run where he was elevated to the top of the card, once got handcuffed to the ropes and had dog food poured all over him, I believe by Baron Corbin. So it's for some reason WWE has a fascination with doing wrestling matches involving dog food, and unfortunately in one case the British Bulldog dog poo.
It's like they tried to implement a factor from Fear Factor.
Yeah, for sure. All right, Cam, finish this off here. What is your Mount Rushmore Plus One, sir?
Mine comes from watching recent videos on TikTok and Instagram of people who, because they have a kitchen and cook food, think they know what they're talking about.
So this offends you as someone who is a semi-pro chef.
Yes, semi-pro chef.
I mean, you ran a cooking business. To me, that makes you...
This is true. So mine is kitchen triggers.
Oh.
Ah, okay. Yes. The first one, putting frozen food straight into the pan.
Yes. And now you got to thaw it first.
I see people doing with shrimp all the time, and I'm like, that's disgusting. That is why that shrimp is going to taste
rubbery. It's going to get waterlogged. It's going to get so rubbery. Good.
And you know how easy it is to just defrost
shrimp?
It takes like 3 minutes.
Yeah,
like
just shrimp.
Just take that extra time. Using scissors to cut meat.
Guilty. I've done that.
See,
I've done that with chicken. I've never done it with steak or beef. I think I've only done it with chicken. Like, if I got like a, like, I don't usually want to cook the whole chicken breast, or at least not cook it as whole, because I, you know, chicken breast can be kind of dry.
Yeah.
So I'll sometimes cut that up into more kind of bite size or strips. But that's, so I am guilty of that one.
And I'm not going to say that I haven't used scissors before, but
it's just like, so easy.
When you're using scissors to like, and you're it's the way they describe it. They're like, oh, I'm going to use these scissors to make clean, even cuts. It's like, no, that's what the knife is for. The scissors, you're going to get all sorts of different sizes and stuff. And it's just like, just use a knife. I see a set of knives right there. Just use the knives, especially in a cooking video.
Sure.
Like what you do in private, whatever. But if you're like promoting this, like,
oh, I see
that's
what
not
saying.
What you should be doing. This one right here. When people use garlic, but it comes from a jar, and they're like, and now we're going to use fresh garlic.
Oh,
first
instead
off,
of actually like smashing
yes,
it. And, yeah.
That is jarlic, and garlic in a jar is by no means anywhere close to fresh
garlic.
Well,
any food like that comes out of a can or
is
a jar
not fresh.
Is going to take on some flavor of the can or the jar, and it's not going to be,
yeah.
Well, one, fresh, yes, but also it's going to take on a little bit of a different flavor.
Yeah. It's clearly not fresh. It's in a jar.
Like, yeah, yeah come no, on. That's definitely misleading. Sure.
This is a little petty, and maybe it's just more funny. But
embrace
when, people
ahead.
Are like, when they're like, "All right, now we're going to use heavy seasoning," and it's just a couple sprinkles of salt and pepper.
Oh yeah,
like
yeah, yeah,
that's
yeah.
That's not heavy seasoning, and honestly, that's really not even like seasoning. Like I don't
know. Like I mean, like especially if you're cooking a steak or something, like you basically need to see almost all white. With the
yeah.
amount of salt
and with
put on
steak,
that.
Sure, you don't need to add anything besides salt and pepper,
no.
But a couple sprinkles, that's not using heavy seasoning.
No, that's
and
not
then when
seasoned
people are
nearly
like,
enough.
To taste, I'm like, what does that mean? Because if you're cooking this video and the whole point is to like get people to do it, they need to know measurements. So just being like, ooh, salt and pepper to taste, like, no, give people an amount. Like,
but there's something to taste, right? Because not, I mean, what is too salty to me might not be too salty
very
to
true.
You. So salt to taste just means like to whatever your tolerance
yeah.
is, right?
But again, this more just kind of falls back to like if you're making a video and like you're wanting your viewers to follow you step by step, you need to give them
give
legit
the actual
step-by-step.
Something they
yeah.
can follow. Yeah, that makes sense.
The next one, seasoning your raw meat in the kitchen sink.
People do that?
People do that all the time.
I've never seen that before.
People will dump 7-8 chicken breasts in the sink.
Like,
and then,
unprotected.
Unprotected.
Like directly into the sink.
Unprotected. And then their excuse is like, oh, well, I clean the sink. Okay, but that one time you forget to clean the sink after having a bunch of raw chicken in there,
ooh.
And then you go back the next day
yeah.
and you put something in there, I mean, that's why you're
and
throwing up.
And I wouldn't trust the clean of the sink either.
Hell, that's why you have mixing pots and pans.
Yeah.
Like, the sink is to wash dishes.
Or if it's like an entire package, I usually just like open the whole thing up, season over the top of it, put it in.
Exactly.
And then season the other side as it's cooking in the pan.
But people were literally, they would get out dish cleaning stuff, clean the sink, and then throw in
the chicken,
raw chicken and season
ugh.
It. And I'm just like, I'm
especially
don't,
with chicken, because like you said, the salmonella thing.
Yeah, it's just wild.
That's
but yeah,
all right.
Kitchen triggers.
No, most of those, except for the scissors, most of those triggered me as well.
Yeah.
Like I was with you, like the scissors, I'm okay, guilty.
Guilty.
The other ones I haven't done. The other ones I haven't done. All right, that'll conclude Mount Rushmore Plus One for this week. When we get back on the other side of the break, final segment for today before the Mean Gene show starts at 2 o'clock. It'll be time for what we love from sports this week and the worst people in sports this week when the bullpen returns on ESPN Radio 97.5 and 92.5.
Your home for sports is ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. This is The Bullpen on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here are the producers of ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Welcome back in. ESPN Radio 97.5 and 92.5. Brian McDonald, Cam Smith, John Bellmer here with you. We'll be back next week, and we'll wrap up this segment before the Mean Gene show starts next, or at 2 o'clock here. I've almost said next segment. We'll finish up here with the worst people in sports and what we love from sports. My worst person in sports is a local ABC affiliate in Fort Wayne, Indiana, WPTA to be exact. So game one's going on. It's exciting. The Pacers, you know, they're coming back towards the very end. They're down just a couple points. And literally within like the last 2 minutes of the game, it goes from a broadcast of the game and the Pacers come back to and like coverage and a tease to the upcoming newscast in this clip.
Thunder clinging to this three-point lead. SGA the drive inside. Shot blocked. Siakam throws it back.
Next on 21 Alive News, the man who was brutally beaten at Pike's Pub last week has come forward. Hear what he wants to have happen now. Also tonight, a big night for Pacer fans as Indiana is in the NBA Finals. We'll show you a local business who has seen a boost from the Yes
Sir. Cut him off, Johnny. Cut him off.
Because he'll have a fog overnight tonight.
I love that he talks about big night for Pacers fans as they cut off the game. If you haven't seen the video, this is right about the 110 mark in the fourth quarter. So the Pacers are right, towards the end there. Of that eventual comeback that ended with the Tyrese Halliburton game winner. But WPTA in Fort Wayne, Indiana, cut it off to promote the news broadcast and in part talk about big night for Pacers fans as they took the game off for Pacers fans trying to watch game one against OKC. Massive fail there from WPTA, the local ABC affiliate. Who is your worst person in sports, Cam?
My worst person, and this is going to have to go back, I believe, 2 weeks, just because I don't think we were able to get to it last week. And this is more of a worst take, and I believe it was Kendrick Perkins when they were having a discussion of like who could be the new face of the league, and he said that Ant Edwards is not going to be the face of the league because he's not a married family man with children. But then the examples he used
Kobe, who once had to give his wife a $4 million ring because he allegedly raped someone in a Colorado hotel room.
And Larry Bird wasn't married with kids until years into his career. So it was just more just like an awful
dumb take.
Yeah, like nobody cares if they're married with kids in order to be the face of the league. Yeah,
Derek Jeter didn't get married until after he was done. How did he do in his career?
Pretty damn good.
He did pretty damn well. All right. One other quick worst person. I won't go too far in this, but the state of California gets a worst person nominee because they took away a high school student's gold medal in her track and field event because she celebrated too much after she dominated the field in a 100-meter race or something. She apparently had a fire extinguisher and put out her feet because her feet were so blazing from how fast he was running. She does that, and they took away her gold medal. Like, I get you're mad. Maybe there's some sort of penalty. I don't know what it would be, but don't take away the gold medal. Not only because she deserved it, she won, but, like, what, do you take it away, give it to second place? What's that going to mean to second place?
She knows
she still lost.
Yeah, I would have given her an extra medal for creativity.
All right, let's quickly go to what we loved in sports this week. We're done with the anger sharks. Time to go ahead and swim. Doggy paddle, in fact, over to the Sea of Tranquility. I'll mention too quickly as we near our final minute here today. The Rockies, who were on pace to become by far the worst team in baseball history, surpassing last year's White Sox, swept the Marlins earlier this week on the road in Miami. Unbelievable that the Rockies were able to do that. And also, because I'm a Longhorns homer, shout out to the women, the Lady Longhorns for winning the national title in softball last night. That's why I love the sports, Cam.
It's crazy to think that the Rockies needed 60 games to win 10. My favorite, I'm just going to say the Astros taking over first place and shoving it back into Mariners fans love who it. Are always talking.
All right, that'll do it for the bullpen this week. We'll be back next week. Stay tuned for the Mean Gene Show at 2 o'clock. Have a great weekend, Houston.
ESPN 97.5.